Welcome to the show, Mira Soleiras. Today hosting, I have in studio Paul Watson, who is the co-founder of Greenpeace and also founder of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, an organization dedicated to research, investigation, and enforcement of laws, treaties, resolutions, and regulations established to protect marine wildlife worldwide. The organization does much more than that also, but he'll be speaking today specifically about the seal hunt. We thought we'd have him as a guest today on the show to talk about his ongoing fight against the seal hunt that's been going. You've been fighting against the seal hunt for how long?
Oh, I think this pretty much the 70s. All my life. You know, I was first got aware of it in the late 50s, and there were demonstrations in the early 60s. Mm-hmm. But I took the first Greenpeace expedition out to oppose it in the spring of 1976. Mm-hmm. And we came up with this idea of spraying dye on the seal pelts, and mm-hmm. wasn't able to do it with Greenpeace, but we did do it in 1979. And took our ship, the Sea Shepherd, into the ice in 79. Mm-hmm. And the last time we were in there with the ship was in 1983 when we blockaded the harbor and escorted sealing vessels out of the Gulf of St. Lawrence. And so this next month will be the first time since 83 that we'll be bringing the ship back into the ice.
Okay. We'll be talking a little bit, we'll be talking a lot more about this in a few minutes. But first, I think it was last year we were talking a lot about Paul Watson and the situation. You were held by the Dutch government and Norway wanted you, and we were reading press releases to people on the air and asking them to fax call right to the Dutch consulate. And what happened? Because we never really talked on the show after that about how you were freed, because I remember there was a party at Bob Hunter's place because you were freed. So what happened? Maybe you can give us a little resume of the reasons why you were held, what was the situation, and how it was resolved.
Well, our ship arrived in late March of last year in Germany, and I was arrested by the Germans on an extradition demand by Norway. Well, the Germans took a look at this and thought it was all pretty ridiculous and had me released right away, and then on the way back the Dutch had me rearrested for the same warrant. And they were a little more bureaucratic than the Germans, so it took a little longer. So I ended up spending 80 days in prison in the Netherlands waiting for an extradition hearing. And at the extradition hearing, the Dutch judge ruled in my favor and refused Norway's request for extradition. And as soon as I was released, Norway dropped their warrant. I guess they were so embarrassed because of the response and the support that I received when I was in prison that they just dropped mm-hmm. it. And the Dutch were actually quite taken by surprise. I don't think anybody's ever protested the Dutch on anything. Mm-hmm. And they had demonstrations in everywhere from Israel to Australia to Canada to the U.S. and even in Brazil. And so they were really taken aback by that. But what my arrest did serve to do was to focus attention on Norway's continued illegal mm-hmm. whaling activities. And that was a great victory mm-hmm. in itself. And it was worth doing the time in prison to get that kind mm-hmm. of publicity.
While you were in prison, did you feel at some point that the way we were really receiving the information was that your life would be threatened if you were
taken?
So my point is, how would you balance like saying, well, okay, probably we're getting a lot of publicity for all of this, but at the same time I need to stay alive too and everything?
Well, there's a lot of risks in everything we do, and we did receive a lot of death threats from the Norwegians. Steinar Bastesen, who's a member of parliament, very outrageously outspoken, said that if I got into a Norwegian prison, he'd make sure that I'd never leave alive. Now, you got to take a threat pretty seriously when it's coming from a member of parliament mm-hmm. when he's saying those kind of things. So, the Norwegians have a very violent history of opposing people who are protecting wildlife. Eileena Hennis, her house was burned to the ground in Bergen for opposing the seal hunt and the whale hunt. Odd Lindberg is in exile in Sweden now because he exposed atrocities. As a Royal Norwegian sealing inspector, he exposed this, and they had all his property confiscated. He was charged with treason for violating their Secrecy Act. Mm-hmm. So they can be very violent to anybody who opposes what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. You've had a threat of physical violence directed at you many, many, many times. But in that case, it was particularly scary because, as you said, it came from the member of the parliament.
Yeah, and we have a long history with the Norwegians. So So it was quite a relief to be free.
Yeah.
There was a lot of sympathy in the Netherlands, so I wasn't really... Mm-hmm. I was quite confident that the Dutch would not send me there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, after 3 weeks after I was in prison, we received a letter from Prince Bernhard, who said that there was no possibility that the Netherlands would send us to there because the Dutch government agreed completely with our position on whaling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe we can move on to the seal. You talked a little bit about some of the stuff you've been doing, like trying to put some dye, I think there was some organic dye on the pelt of the baby seal so that it wouldn't be marketable anymore, stuff like that. Maybe you can go a little bit further into the little, your personal history and Sea Shepherd's Conservation Society's history of dealing with the seal hunt.
We tried to use the dye to destroy the commercial value of the pelts and not hurt the seals. That was back in 79-83. But things have changed now. They're no longer killing seals for their fur. In fact, there's 1 million seal pelts in warehouses in Norway that they have no market for. The only real product of any commercial value, if you can call that, is the penises from the seals, which are dried and powdered and used as some sort of ridiculous snake oil remedy for impotence in the Far East. I mean, this isn't an idea the Chinese came up with. Canada actually had to go there. It costs mm-hmm. millions of taxpayers money to sell them on this idea mm-hmm. and convince them that this is what they should do. Mm-hmm. So Canada is now involved in the sex potion business and international trade. I know I called Mr. Tobin when he started this the Lorena Bobbitt to the world for advocating this kind of thing. But
I find it interesting you talk about this because often when that issue comes up, people imagine that they start talking about Asian medicine, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I always like to bring people back to the issue that the seals are being killed here and that I'd be very surprised if they are not actively working at developing a market mm-hmm. that, you know, so I'm very glad you...
Well, the other thing, too, is that, you know, there's an impression that if you criticize Chinese medicine, then you're being racist. Well, the fact is I consulted with Dr. Ni, one of the foremost Chinese medical doctors in California, mm-hmm. and he just looked at me like, this isn't Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
If this is Chinese medicine, then selling snake oil, you know, rattlesnake heads in potions is Western
mm-hmm.
medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, it's a racist concept to even think that this is legitimate Chinese
mm-hmm.
medicine.
Mm-hmm.
This is just voodoo stuff. And it's, you know, superstitious. And I shouldn't say voodoo stuff because a lot of people take that seriously. So that was a misplaced on my intentions. But the thing is that... The hunted, they're being killed because the government wants them dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's a perception, a political perception, that harp seals are a threat to the survival of the codfish, when
mm-hmm.
in fact this is just nothing but scientific ignorance on the part of a great many people. In fact, the evidence is just the reverse. If you want to increase codfish populations, then by all means you should be increasing harp seal populations
mm-hmm.
because the more harp seals, the more codfish you'll have. And the reason for this is that harp seals do not eat codfish, but they do eat fish that eat cod. And therefore, if you... decrease the harp seal populations, you increase those predatory fish populations, and you have a further depletion. The government of Canada understands this. They have had exhaustive scientific reports on this, and for years they tried to suppress those reports, and it's now emerged as a scandal. Many scientists have been threatened with their jobs. They've been intimidated if their reports were to be released to the public. Very similar to what happened to Lindbergh for releasing the truth in Norway. So the problem is in the world today is that if you're a legitimate scientist and your concern is with revealing the truth, I mean, your job, your integrity, even your life can be threatened for standing up for what is true.
And so the government is specifically choosing the reports from research that go with their agenda. You know, we were talking about David Levine earlier before the show, who's a researcher who knows about seals, and his reports are not being taken seriously by the government.
Well, Dr. David Levine's probably the world's foremost authority on harp seals, and he told me many years ago, one time when he was preparing a report, that if my report sides with the government's position, then you'll hear a great deal about it. If it doesn't, then you will hear nothing about it. Dr. David Levine was always cited as an authority by the government if his studies were beneficial to them and their position, and then he was denounced by the government if it was the reverse. And... But I think that the fact that he has consistently been very, very honest about this over the years and has, in fact, it was his studies that first revealed how to count these seals in the wild using ultraviolet photography. But the government just picks and chooses who it's going to listen to, and usually on the basis of whether it's political or not.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole issue about subsidies for meat, seal meat. Can you talk about that?
No, well, nobody really eats seal meat. You know, yeah. A few people might do, but I mean,
so what do they do with it?
It's mainly what meat's taken off the ice is used to feed mink and foxes and in fur farms. Mm-hmm. It's a cheap source of meat for that.
Mm-hmm.
We've come up with an alternative seal hunt. We did 3 years of research on it, and that is to comb the seals, to remove the molted hair, the naturally molted hair. We work with Dr. David Levine on this. We established that there's no impact on the seals. They seem to enjoy the process, actually. And so it's a cruelty-free, non-lethal form of sealing. And we can employ hundreds of people in doing this. I've got two German companies that will pay $500 a kilo for all the seal hair that can be gathered. And from 120 seals will produce 2.5 kilos of hair. That will make a bed comforter that would sell in the European market for about $5,000 Canadian dollars. So these are very high-end products that can be produced. And the harp seal hair is transparent and hollow, that is, each follicle. So it's very similar to eiderdown. And eiderdown isn't a very expensive material. And eiderdown has to be collected from nests by hand and washed. It's a very labor-intensive product. And this harp seal hair can be gathered a lot easier, a lot quicker. But there's really a distinct lack of imagination in the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. They constantly say, oh, this is a ridiculous idea. You can't possibly collect enough hair. Well, if I have a textile company and a natural fiber mailing company in Germany who are both saying, of course, well, we're willing to invest in it, and we're not going to invest in it if it was ridiculous. So the problem is that the government does not want us to go in there because they don't want this alternative being presented. We tried to present it to the people in the Magdalen Islands in 1995, and I was attacked by a mob of 300 drunken sealers who just coming out with all sorts of ridiculous things like, you know, this is a faggoty idea, and, you know, brushing seals is ridiculous. They're meant to be killed, and on and on. So it's this kind of attitude is that we're out there to kill things. We're not out there to make money. Quite frankly, I don't think the government of Canada or the people of the Magdalen Islands are interested in jobs. I think they're only interested in getting out there and having a good time from their version of a good time by killing something.
Is there some opposition over there to the seal hunt, or it's like completely...
There is. We did have supporters for our campaign in the Magdalen Islands, and a couple of people were quite severely beaten for holding those opinions. And we've had a lot of support in Newfoundland, too, for this. The Canadian Association of Seals and Sealers hasn't been very supportive. They said that, oh, it's a good idea if anybody else but Sea Shepherd had a thought of it. So do they want jobs or do they not want jobs? And, you know, here we are offering a product that can give Canada a very good image throughout the world. But they're not interested in it. You know, they just want to remain back in the old days of blood and guts on the ice, and you know, reviving the old rituals where they go down and the first seal which is killed in the season, they open up its heart and drink its blood. And you know, this is, I don't know what they get out of it, but this is not something that we as Canadians should be associated with.
You wanted to provide an alternative, an economic alternative for people who are sort of at the bottom of the economic ladder?
Well, I don't know if they're in the bottom of the economic ladder because, you know, there's all this talk about how everybody is so poor, and I've yet to see very much poverty there, you know. What is poverty? I mean, it's certainly, these are people who have a couple of vehicles, usually very new vehicles, you know, television sets, a good, nice, comfortable home and everything. I don't understand. I haven't seen very much poverty here.
So I was reading in one of the newsletter you brought today that they were trying to give you the fishermen who had money, and they were not interested in that, but that there were some people who were actually interested in that. See, as a valid form of employment.
That's how our project hit a stone wall, is that the Canadian government said, well, we'll let you go out and gather the seal hairs, but you can only hire commercial fishermen. Now, all of those fishermen boycott the project. So I said, well, I can't get them to work for us. I'd like to hire unemployed people to do it. And the government said, no, we're not going to allow you to hire unemployed people. You can only hire people who are commercial fishermen who make in excess of $60,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What are your projects with the seal hunt? What will you be doing in the next few months?
Well, on March 10th, we'll be leaving Sydney, Nova Scotia with our ship, the Sea Shepherd. So we'll be bringing a 200-foot vessel into the ice and going right into the midst of where the seals are. It's a difficult thing because under the laws in Canada with the federal government, it is illegal to witness the seal hunt, photograph it, or film it. So it's a gag law. To just see a seal being killed is a crime. So to counter that, we'll be going in and focusing the international attention on what we're doing by bringing in a crew of celebrities. So I'll have Pierce Brosnan and Michelle Yeoh from the James Bond movie will be joining us, Kevin Nealon and Sophie Marceau, and Linda Blair, and a few other people that will be joining us out on the ice. And, you know, we live in a media culture, and celebrities attract that kind of attention. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to attract attention, they might as well attract attention mm-hmm. to something like this. And Michelle Yeoh is very good because she's going to be very outspoken about the seal penis trade in the Far East. She's a very respected actress, especially throughout the People's Republic and Taiwan and places. And it's great. Jackie Chan actually has been doing PSAs in denouncing the use of tiger bones as aphrodisiacs mm-hmm. In the Far East. Mm-hmm. And so I think between the two of them, Michelle Yeoh and Jackie Chan, I think we're going to make some significant progress in challenging that.
Mm-hmm. There will be opposition to it. What do you think is going to happen over there? Do you think it's going to be a mess?
I'm not too concerned about the sealers because they can't really, you know, get on board our ship mm-hmm. or reach us. The Canadian government, well, we try to work in cooperation mm-hmm. with them, but, you know, it's hard. Working with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans mm-hmm. is, and trying to work in cooperation with them is almost impossible. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're a little, well, we always call them the Newfoundland Mafia because their bureaucracy is controlled by this tight mm-hmm. little clique of Newfoundlanders who are very, very protective of their traditional support mm-hmm. for the seal hunt. Mm-hmm. And still, even though the scientists say otherwise, these bureaucrats still say the seals are eating the cod, we got to kill the seals, you know. Mm-hmm. And they can't really get it through their thick skulls that's not the case. But, you know, we're almost at the turn of the century, and we're still carrying on with this. The largest slaughter of wildlife anywhere in the world, we've revived it, and this is what we're going to go into the new millennium with, is this kind of legacy. And it's ridiculous. It doesn't make any money. The maritime provinces in that region are the most heavily subsidized, government-subsidized economic areas in the world. And the problem is that because they receive so much in subsidies from the government, there's really no initiative or imagination to create new sources of revenue, for instance, seal brushing, or expanding tourism in the winter with the seals. Between tourism and seal brushing, ice diving in the winter time, you can create an incredible economic input into that area. But, that's responded to by statements like Richard Cashin of the Newfoundland Fishermen's Union, who says, tourism is whorism. You know, mm-hmm. these are the kind of things that they respond to. You know, there's just no imagination at all. And nobody, it's almost the impression that nobody wants to work. They just want to continue getting the government subsidies mm-hmm. and the government handouts. The fact is that they're sitting here waiting for the northern cod to come back like next year or the next year like that. The northern cod isn't coming back. They wiped it out. Mm-hmm. The dragging fleets of this country just went in there and exterminated that fish. And it won't be back. And if it does come back, it isn't going to be for centuries, not mm-hmm. years. So are we supposed to pay people handouts for the next 200 years until they can it comes back? And every time the population slightly comes back, they go in and hunt whatever mm-hmm. Whatever is has survived. So it's they've got to start looking for new alternatives and looking at new ways of living in harmony. You know, the inshore fishermen in Newfoundland did just great working, living in harmony with their fisheries for hundreds of years mm-hmm. until those big, massive factory draggers came in there and destroyed everything. Both ourselves and the inshore fishermen warned the federal government that the cod was going to collapse 10 years before it did. They didn't listen to anybody. They just listened to the big corporate fishing interests. And what they've done on the East Coast, they're now doing on the West Coast with the salmon. Almost every single commercial fishery worldwide is on the verge of collapse or has collapsed. Mm-hmm. Everything is being overfished. There's simply not enough fish in the oceans to continue to feed the ever-expanding populations of humanity. Mm-hmm. And is that what it's going to take? We're going to strip the oceans bare before we decide that we're going to have to change our lifestyles? Because change our lifestyles we're going to have to do. If we don't do it voluntarily, we're going to be forced to do it.
How do you keep the spirit and the motivation up? Because I find that a lot of the time, small gains that are made for the animals or the earth are lost so easily. And it's been happening a bit with the seal, you know. There were some gains made in the 80s. And well, how do you keep the motivation up? Do you find it's always like, working to keep that little gain up and nothing, never going really further?
Well, the problem with our movement is that all victories are temporary and all defeats are usually permanent. So we have to constantly keep returning to the battlefield, so to speak. But you don't do this because, you know, you can't fret too much on whether you're going to win or lose. You do it because it's the only thing you can do, the right thing to do. It's as the Plains Indians had a way of looking at it. The way of the warrior is to go up against insurmountable odds, to do it because it's right, and you're doing it for your children's children. And you really can't allow yourself to be depressed at the strength of your opposition, because, you know, you keep hammering away, it'll eventually fall. So many things have changed which people thought in the past were insurmountable,
like
slavery, like suffrage, the vote for women, the civil rights movement, you know, the India. Well, here's the best example in recent years is who would have ever thought that Nelson Mandela, a convicted terrorist sitting in prison for life on Robben's Island, would emerge as the president of the country? I mean, these things are absolutely amazing in hindsight when you see the evolution of these different causes and how people have emerged victorious out of very depressing and persecuted positions.
How do you see the place of something like this, a demonstration happening in Toronto on Saturday the 28th again? That's what you're here to talk about. How do you see this in the larger, broader picture?
Well, you know, the problem is that we all can't go to the ice and intervene. The strength of any movement lies in diversity of approaches, and we all have to do our part. And so if people can attend a demonstration, that is doing something. Demonstrations do reach the eye of the government, and I've seen just how effective they have been over the years. There'll be a demonstration in Montreal. There'll be one in Ottawa. There's demonstrations in London, in Paris, in Hamburg, Germany, in Sydney, Australia. The government is very much aware that these are happening. We shut down the commercial seal hunt before. It's never been shut down in total, but we did shut down the commercial side of it, and it was this... Really, it was the combination of all of these events, direct interference on the ice, boycotts, demonstrations, letter writing, all of this stuff, it's the cumulative value of all of those different approaches that has the effect. We can't do it with just any one approach.
It's also a good opportunity for people at home sometimes who feel powerless, you know, and who feel they can't because they don't have money, they can't, like, give lots of money to organizations, so they can't help that way, or they can't go on the ice, as you said, or they don't have the time to be active, you know, 100% of their time in some organizations, to go and do something and feel that they're doing something, and relieve them a little bit from that tension and guilt from not doing anything about it. Thanks, Paul, for being with us.
Well, thank you.
It was a great talk. Your organization is called Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. They can be reached in the U.S. at phone number 310-301-SEAL. They also have a website that I checked out yesterday, and it was great. It's www.seashepherd.org.